Good morning. We thank you for tuning into our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ here in Bowling Green. We want to encourage you to come and meet with us. We're always glad to have visitors. We have visitors from time to time, and it's very encouraging. We want to be encouraging to you. We hope that if you come and meet with us, you will appreciate a direct and simple approach to the Scriptures for the authority for the things that we do. Whether we're talking about the things that we teach or the things that we practice, whether we're talking about things that we practice as individuals or things that we practice as a local church, we have the obligation to respect truth. And there are so many human theories out there today that set aside this approach. We see it all the way back in the Bible with emphasis upon human traditions and preconceived notions from cultural errors that are handed down to people. And so we want to avoid all of that. We want to avoid opinionism, where people just think, well, I'm smart enough to come up with a plan of salvation for myself. I'm smart enough to invent the work of the church. I just think that it would be good if we did this or we did that. And the part where people say, I just think, that's what gets people into trouble. There is a way that seems right to a person, but the end of it is the way of death. You may think I just made that up. No, if you're a Bible student, you know that I just quoted from Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 12 or Proverbs 16:25. They both say the same thing. There is a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. So we want to avoid that, obviously. It's destructive. We want to appreciate a simple and direct approach to the words of God, the inspired words of God. That's what I want us to do today. We're going to be talking a little bit of, the larger subject is salvation, but with emphasis upon sin and its cause. Its cause and its remedy. I want us to take a look at that. There's so many people in the religious world today, and even those that are outside of practicing any religion, they've also been so influenced by the popularity of this particular doctrine that they're influenced by it. And I'm talking about basically the old Calvinistic concept of salvation and the old Calvinistic concept of inherited sin. It's really amazing how many people believe that. And, of course, Calvin constructed an argument. He constructed it upon faulty premises. But we'll be looking at some of that as we move along. But the first tenet, we sometimes talk about the tulip doctrine. I'm not sure yet if I'm going to go into all of that. We may eventually do that. But I want to talk about first, because we're going to be emphasizing sin and the cause of sin and the remedy for sin. We'll be talking, of course, largely about this idea of inherited sin. It's argued that humans and human nature is basically tainted by Adam's sin, going all the way back to Adam, in the beginning, as Jesus called it, right after the creation of the universe. And you have the idea that because Adam sinned, that his sin passed on to all people, and that we today are affected by it. And you might be thinking, well, now my preacher said that there was a verse that basically says that. Well, I know what that would be in reference to. That would be Romans 5 and verse 12. But sadly, that verse is always misused by folks who promote Calvinism. It is always misused. Part of it is completely ignored in order to reach the conclusion that they want to reach and that they would want you to reach. That passage is misapplied. Let's look at it right here in the beginning of the study. In Romans chapter 5 and verse 12, it says, wherefore is by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin. And so death passed upon all men, for all have sinned. I wonder how many people were a little shocked that I said, for all have sinned, or because all have sinned. Because that part's not quoted quite often. If it is the part of the verse, it's as much a part of the verse as the first part of the verse. It's in the manuscripts, it's in our English translations, it's in all translations. But people just ignore it like it wasn't there. What did Paul say here? Death passed upon all. That's true. Death passed upon all men. But how? Why? Because they inherited the sin of Adam? No. In fact, just two verses after this, you're going to see that that's not the case. But right here in this verse, it says, death passed upon all because all have sinned. Why does death pass upon you and me? It actually has very little to do with Adam. You know, you might argue from the context here in Romans chapter 5 that Adam, of course, did sin, and Adam was punished as a result of his sin, and he was cast out of the Garden of Eden. And as a result of his sin and Eve's sin and the sins of others at that time, sin became acceptable. You might argue that, to practice, that sin became acceptable, okay to practice. You know, I recently mentioned the example of Noah's flood and wickedness. We talked about wickedness that can develop to the point that a whole society, or all of the people on the earth, with the exception of just eight of them, can be deserving of a highly destructive death. Death of drowning. Terrible death. Death of drowning. That would be brought on by God himself. Because why? Because the earth was filled with violence, and the earth was corrupt, and every thought and the imagination of the heart was only evil continually. I just quoted from Genesis 6 and verse 5. That can happen. That can certainly happen. And that's what happened back in the days of Noah. So people became very comfortable with sin. I wonder if we're in a time like that today, where people just become so comfortable with sin that anyone who questions it or speaks out against it really is the bad person. Really the bad guy is the person who speaks out against it. That does happen. That has happened. It's happening here in our culture today, and we have to be very careful to oppose that. To establish a worldview where people are comfortable with practicing truth and teaching others to practice what is right and what is true. And that people are comfortable condemning sin. That's what we need to cultivate. It's kind of become the opposite of that today. So could we argue that because Adam sinned and Eve sinned and others there, and they were cast out into the earth, could we argue that there were circumstances that came as a result of that enabled more people to more freely sin? You might argue that. You might say that. Now, I've questioned that before. Adam and Eve, I know people talk about that a lot. We want to be very careful. Adam and Eve actually sinned in that pristine, perfect place called the Garden of Eden. Their initial sins, the ones we read about in Genesis chapter 3, were actually committed in the Garden of Eden. So let's be careful about that. The main thing we need to understand is that people do sin. And you know, the Bible isn't as much concerned about the origin of sin, the cause of sin, as it is the remedy for sin. We'll be talking about both of those. We need to appreciate what the Bible teaches. So number one, Romans 5 and verse 12 does not teach that sin or its consequences passed upon humans or passes upon humans today because of Adam. No, it teaches that the consequences of sin, death, Romans 6:23, the wages of sin is death. Death passes upon people today because they sin. You see that? Romans chapter 5, verse 12, the last words of the verse. For all have sinned. Now, why did I say what I did about Adam and Adam's sin. Well, if you read on in verse 14, it says, "Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over them that had not sinned," watch this, "had not sinned after the similitude or likeness of Adam's transgression, who is the figure of him that was to come." What? Can you believe how many millions of people have been taught and they have believed that death, we face death for sin because of Adam's sins being inherited by us? So much so that even one popular commentator taught that even little infants are born with sin because they inherit it from Adam. You know, even to go that far, even to argue that little newborn babies, if they die, or if one dies in the womb, they die early, even if they die when they're infants, that they will be doomed because of Adam's sin. And that has led some people to think that you can baptize an infant. One who does not believe, he can't believe, he's incapable of believing, he cannot hear the gospel and understand it and believe it because he's just a baby. He's not even accountable yet. They would argue that even unaccountable little infants and little children, babies and toddlers and little children, are doomed and damned to hell because of the sin that they inherited from Adam. They didn't inherit any sin from Adam. The Bible nowhere teaches such a thing. Romans 5:12 does not teach that. It teaches the exact opposite. It teaches that people are responsible for their own sins. Death passes upon one if he has sinned, because he has sinned. That's what it teaches. The Bible teaches. And furthermore, in that verse 14, it said, "Those who sinned not after the similitude of Adam's transgression." Wouldn't it be the similitude of Adam's transgression if it's his sins that we inherit? How can people, especially friends, theologians, some of the old Calvinistic commentators, especially men who call themselves preachers today, how can they, with a straight face, read this passage and continue to claim that we are guilty of Adam's sin? He talked about sinning not after the similitude of Adam's sin. We need to read the Bible maybe a little more carefully than we often do. Well, what happens, and this is where we need to be careful, some people allow the Bible to be read for them. You ever think about that? They allow the Bible to be read for them. Now, I'm not saying that some people are not capable of recognizing truth when they hear it. They do. Some people certainly do that. But I'm afraid a lot of people in denominationalism who just believe what their preacher says. They don't open their Bibles and find out whether it's true. And here he is quoting only parts of the verses, the parts that work for his preconceived idea or someone else's preconception, like John Calvin's, and people are not reading to make sure that he read everything. Well, for example, like in Romans 5 and verse 12. They just leave off what they need to. I wonder how many people out there in religion know that also Romans 5:14 is there and talks about humans today sinning not after the similitude of Adam's transgression. That is, you had Adam given a positive divine law, in the garden, regarding what he could eat and what he could not eat. Now think about that. Are we under that law today? Has God told us of all of the different vegetables and things? Is there some passage that you can go to? Some may think, well, in Acts chapter 15 it talks about don't eat blood. Okay, well then don't eat blood. But what about a fruit tree? Are there any specific instructions given regarding that for us today? Do we sin? Is it possible for us to sin the way Adam sinned? Of whatever produce you want to talk about. Can we sin that way? No, we can't sin that way. We can sin in different ways. We're under a different law. We're under the law of Christ, according to 1 Corinthians 9 in verse 16. So that's why this is worded this way in Romans 5:14. So we need to consider these things. Furthermore, sin is not inherited. Jesus taught that sin is actually committed. Sin is committed. It is not inherited. Those are not the same thing. There is a difference between inheriting something and committing something. We know that. Look those words up in any dictionary. You'll see the difference. And there's a difference between them in the Greek and in the English. But in John chapter 8 and verse 32, Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And this upset the leading Jews of the day. They answered and said, "We are Abraham's seed. We've never been in bondage to anyone. How do you say, you shall be made free?" Well, of course, they just utterly denied reality. And that's what people do when they get caught up in a misconception. They will literally deny reality. You know, I think of this transgender stuff. The people are denying reality. It's hard to reason with people who deny reality, what is obviously true. Well, that's what the Jews were doing right here. Because why did I say that? Because what was their present condition? They said, "We've never been in bondage to any man." What? Now, did maybe they had forgotten their history with Egypt, with Assyria, with Babylon, with many others? Maybe they had forgotten all of that. Did they forget the present history? Were they living in some other reality? What was the reality in their day? They were living under Roman bondage. Right when they uttered these words, the Romans were in control of them. The Romans were in control of their city, Jerusalem. The Romans were in control of the known world. So how can you honestly say, "We've never been in bondage to anyone," while not only had they been in bondage to men in the past, they were presently under bondage to the Romans? So that's a dishonest thing to say. But look at what Jesus said in reply. Jesus answered them, "Verily, verily, I say to you, whosoever commits sin, the same is the servant of sin." Whoever commits sin. Jesus, I thought sin was inherited. No, sin is committed. Sin is committed. Whoever commits sin. Jesus uttered these words here, and John only recorded them. John the writer was the writer. But in 1 John chapter 3, where John is the author of the words, it's kind of interesting that he taught exactly the same thing. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4. "Whoever committeth," King James says committeth in the King James language, "whoever commits sin transgresses also the law. For sin is the transgression of the law." Wait a minute, John. How do I acquire sin? Well, some say you inherit it. No, it is. But he said you don't inherit. He said you actually commit it. Sin is committed. If you have sin, it is because you committed sin. Friends, anyone can see this. Even someone who's been taught the errors of total depravity and inherited sin, the Calvinistic concepts, even if you've been taught this, you can see the truth here. The Bible teaches that sin is committed, not inherited. Furthermore, the Bible refutes this idea of inherited sin or of a sinful nature. It actually refutes these concepts. In Ezekiel chapter 28, in verse 15, Ezekiel said, "You are blameless in your ways from the day," and Ezekiel is recording here the words of God, "from the day that you were created until unrighteousness was found in you." Now, what principle is embedded in that verse? Well, the concept of of accountability, right? Accountability, of answerability, amenability, all these words we use. And free agency, all that's embedded in that. He said, you were blameless in all of your ways from the day that you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. What if I combine that statement with, since it's also talking about sin and the sinful condition, what if we connected that with a passage like 1 John 3:4 that we just read? Whoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is a transgression of the law. It fits together perfectly. He said, until unrighteousness was found in you. How did it come to be in them? We know that. They committed it. They committed unrighteousness. They committed sin. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 29 says, see, this alone I have found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions, many schemes. He made man upright. Little babies are not born with sin. Because you can't inherit sin. You cannot inherit guilt. How would you do that and be a free agent and be accountable, personally accountable? How can I be accountable for what someone did 6,000 years ago? How can you do that? How would you do that? I'd like for somebody to answer that. Well, it's not. They say it's not a matter of accountability. It's just a matter of reality. That Adam's sin was passed. No, we talked about reality. Reality is that sin is committed. Sin is not inherited. The reality is that we don't sin. Our sin is not like Adam's sin. Romans chapter 5 and verse 14. Our sin is not after the similitude of Adam's transgression. How could you replicate Adam's transgression today? Where has God... First of all, where would that tree be? I'd like for somebody to maybe find that for us. Where would the fruit of the... Where would the tree be that contained forbidden fruit? That you read about in Genesis chapter 3. Genesis 2, 15 through 17, and in chapter 3 in the first few verses. Where would you read about that? Where would you go find that, rather? Where would you go in the law of Christ to find instructions about the fruit of that tree? Well, nowhere. That's just not there. We can't commit that sin today. We can't commit Adam's sin. We have a list of sins in the New Testament that we could be guilty of, but we need to keep these things in mind. Let's move on here. What does the Bible actually teach about inherited sin? What does it actually teach? Remember in Ezekiel chapter 18, the Jews were told, quit using a certain proverb. They had this proverb, a saying among them, that the fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. And Ezekiel said, don't use that proverb anymore. You have no occasion to use that proverb. What they had done is misunderstood Exodus chapter 20, where God talked about visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generation. And then some people stop right there, don't they? Boy, isn't it handy? If you got to just stop reading in your Bible, everywhere the next phrase was going to dynamite your position, wouldn't that be great? That's what dishonest people do. Now, I'm not going to do you that way today. I'm going to finish that verse. Of those who hate me. Why might it be that the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of people might hate God? Well, just look at human history. They're taught to. They're taught to hate the ways of God. And thus, they're taught to hate God. He said, of those who hate me. He didn't say merely based upon the fact that they were the descendants of those parents, of those people, that they were either their great-great-grandparents, great-grandparents, or grandparents. He didn't say anything about that. He said, of those who hate me. Ah, that makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that he's talking about the same consequences for the children that would be meted out upon the parents, because the transgression was the same, sin. Sin, the hatred of God and refusal to obey God. Verse 19 of Ezekiel 18 says, the Jews said, why should not the son suffer for the iniquity of the father? In verse 25, they accuse the way of God of being unjust. Well, let's see how God answers that. Now, we need to hear this answer. Verses 4 and 20 of Ezekiel 18. Verse 4 says, behold, God said, all souls are mine. The soul of the father as well as the soul of the son is mine. The soul who sins, it shall die. Okay? Verse 20. The soul who sins shall die. The son shall not suffer for the iniquity of the father, nor shall the father suffer for the iniquity of the son. The righteousness of the righteous shall be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked shall be upon himself. How many denominational preachers that like to preach on Calvinism and argue for this idea of inherited depravity or of passed on sin? How many of them read this verse? How many of them read this to you? They don't. They don't. These verses teach personal accountability, personal responsibility. And so Calvinism and total depravity won't fit into that. They don't fit into the biblical model. The Bible is very, very clear on this. Sin is a choice. Sin is a choice. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 19 says, I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore, choose life that you and your offspring may live. What's that? What obligation and duty did they have? Choose. Make the right choice. This is exactly what Joshua did in that famous, well-known passage of Joshua 24 and verse 15. He gave them an option, didn't he? He said, if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which were that your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood or the river should be there, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What did Joshua teach? He said, that's up to you. It's a matter of your choosing. Choose you this day. Choose you this day whom you will. We need to emphasize certain words that focus upon free agency, personal free agency. You will serve. Because Joshua's point is, you will be answerable for what choice you make. Now, here's what we're going to do. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. But you can do whatever you choose to do, right? Now, you'll be responsible for what choice you make. The consequences could be horrendous for you and for your family, but you need to make that choice. Elijah did the same thing in 1 Kings 18 and verse 21. Stood there in that contest with the prophets of Baal, you remember? The sacrifices that were set up. Remember the water poured all over the sacrifice and the wood and all that. But God answered with fire. But he said what to them? He said, how long will you go on limping between two opinions? If the Lord be God, then serve him. If Baal, then serve him. Friends, that's how it always works. It's still that way today under the New Testament. So Calvinism on this point is obviously wrong, and it's terribly wrong, because people who buy into that don't understand that they are accountable for what they do. They are responsible for what they do. They're waiting for God to do something for them that they can't do. No. And we'll talk about that, the Lord willing, next week. That's the danger of Calvinism. But we're out of time this morning, so we thank you for listening. Hope you'll tune in next week for another study. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.